Hello and welcome to Oxtalk on Tuesday the 19th of August 2025. My name is Bridget and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen and read by Bridget Doyle, Marianne Moxon and Alison Sokskis. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Dawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Oxtalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Oxtalk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 5:53 on Monday 18th of August to 6:03 on Sunday 24th of August. And the sunset times this week will range from 2021 on Monday 28th of August to 2008 on Sunday 24th of August.
Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to Oxtalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, "Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper." Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to Oxtalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.
Hundreds of people enjoyed a visit to Didcot Railway Centre at the weekend. The Steam Railway Heritage Centre is next to Didcot Parkway Rail Station and attracts thousands of visitors every year. Saturday and Sunday were both steam days when steam locomotives pull trains along lines at the centre. The centre has also taken delivery of a second vintage Thornycroft lorry, built in 1930, which used to be owned by the Great Western Railway. It was pushed into the display garage on Saturday by a team of volunteers, with Rosie Walker-Jones steering. Both need considerable reconstruction and are typical of the lorries used in the 1930s and 20s for local deliveries from railway stations. At the time, they were rapidly replacing horse-drawn vehicles, which in some ways was bad news locally, as the provender stores at Didcot provided the horse feed for the complete Great Western Railway system.
Almost £2.5 million has been spent by Oxfordshire County Council on rolling out 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in towns and villages in the county, with an opposition councillor calling it an expensive mess. The County Council approved funding for the rollout of 20-mile-an-hour limits in areas where it has support from the Parish Council and the County Councillor for that ward. So far, a Freedom of Information request sent by the Local Democratic Reporting Service has shown that the Council has spent £2,487,243 on the scheme since 2022. A further £425,000 is forecast to be spent by the end of the 2025-26 financial year. The initial budget for the scheme was up to £8 million, but the County Council confirmed it had reduced this to £4.2 million. A council spokesperson said one of the reasons for this was that more existing poles had been used than expected. The spokesperson added that the cost is expected to come under the £4.2 million budget, but will not know the final costs for the delivery stage of the project for a few months. Andrew Gant, County Council Cabinet Member for Transport Management, said, "This has been a fantastically successful programme, delivering real safety benefits for local communities and representing terrific value for Oxfordshire residents. The scheme has come in under budget not once but twice, presenting opportunities to further support other vital services delivered by the County Council. More than 300 local communities took up or offered to take part, with the active involvement in each case of both the local county councillor and the parish or town council. It's a great example of efficient and effective delivery at county scale, with detailed input and knowledge from local people and elected representatives." But Conservative councillor Liam Walker, leader of the Oxfordshire Alliance Opposition Group, criticised the way the project had been handled and called it an expensive mess. He added, "Rather than follow guidance about traffic calming and other such measures for 20-mile-an-hour roads, they opted just to change signs, and in many cases this has made little difference. Now the same councillors are moaning to Thames Valley Police because they won't go out and hammer motorists with tickets in 20-mile-an-hour areas. Speed cameras or traffic calming measures are not included in the scheme, and parish and town councils will have to fund this themselves if they want them. The introduction of further 20-mile-an-hour speed limits in Oxford has been put on hold until the Botley Road reopens."
The proportion of A-level entries awarded top grades rose again this year, remaining above pre-pandemic highs, national figures show. Oxfordshire results were excellent. In an interview about the A-level results, Sir Ian said, "Students this year have got the grades they deserve, and their grade will hold its value over time because it represents a stable standard of achievement. Also, boys have outperformed girls in top A-level grades for the first time in 7 years, exam results show. The last time boys had a lead was in 2018. Last year, girls were ahead with 28% of entries scoring at least an A, compared to 27.6% of those from boys, according to figures published by the Joint Council for Qualifications. Exam bosses acknowledged the swing towards boys, but said the difference between the sexes is pretty small. There are more A-level entries overall from girls than boys, the figures show, with females making up 54% of all entries. Claire Thompson, Executive Director of Regulation and Compliance at the AQA Exam Board, said that while the percentage of girls achieving A-star A grades is lower this year than their male counterparts overall, nearly 19,000 more females achieved at least an A due to more girls entering for A-levels in general.
The country is now suffering from nationally significant water shortfall despite rain in July, officials warned, amid a drought and hosepipe ban in Oxfordshire. The National Drought Group, which includes the Met Office, regulators, government, water companies and other organisations, has met as 5 areas of the country remain in drought, with 6 more in prolonged dry weather status. England is seeing widespread environmental and agricultural impacts from the lack of water, which is hitting crop yield, reducing feed for livestock, damaging wetlands and river wildlife, and increasing wildfires. Oxfordshire, along with the rest of the Thames Valley, has prolonged dry weather status and is under a hosepipe ban since July 22nd. Despite unsettled weather in July, with many places seeing heavy rain, it was still the 5th warmest on record, with many rivers and reservoir levels continuing to recede compared to June. There are navigation closures or restrictions across 7 canals, including the Oxford Canal, which is facing multiple closures along the waterway due to low water levels. The Environment Agency's Director of Water and National Drought Group, Chairwoman Helen Wakeham, said, "The current situation is nationally significant, and we're calling on everyone to play their part and help reduce the pressure on our water environment. Water companies must continue to quickly fix leaks and lead the way in saving water. We know the challenges farmers are facing and will continue to work with them."
Disgruntled householders in the Cotswold village, where J.D. Vance is enjoying a family holiday, hopes he leaves as quickly as possible. Dean, near Chipping Norton, has been put on virtual lockdown as the US Vice President holidays at a historic manor house. Mr. Vance travelled to the Oxfordshire Cotswolds from Chevening House, the residence of Foreign Secretary David Lammy, with whom he has apparently struck up a friendship. Now he is at 6-acre luxury home Dean Manor. Police barriers block several roads, with anyone wanting to enter the village needing to show ID to police, as well as requiring a legitimate reason for entry. Jonathan Mazar has lived in Dean for 15 years and said a lot of the residents are extremely angry that he is here. He and others displayed signs around the village calling on Mr. Vance to go home and saying, "Fascists, not welcome here." "It's about who he is," said 59-year-old Mr. Mazur. "This is a live and let live place. David Cameron lives here and people get on with him, but J.D. Vance is something else entirely." Explaining villagers' aversion to Donald Trump's number two, he said it was because the administration is attacking so much of what our democratic societies hold dear. Specifically, he cited Mr. Vance and Mr. Trump's public argument with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, the US government's stance on Gaza, and the way they're treating migrants in the US. Mr. Mazur, who works for a charity, said he represents the worst excesses of the American far right. He also said the visit had caused massive disruption to villagers in Dean. "We feel very angry," he said. "It's been foisted upon us. The normal life of the residents of Dean has been suspended." "Not only have the footpaths and roads been closed," he said, "but residents are having their cars searched as they enter the village, with dozens of American Secret Service personnel all around, as well as sniffer dogs." He said, "It feels sort of like someone is invited into your home, someone who represents everything awful about what's going on today. Certainly we do not feel proud that he is here. We feel very angry and outraged that he's been invited in our village, and we hope he goes away as quickly as possible." The owner of Dean Manor, Pippa Hornby, has reportedly apologised to residents of the village for the circus, according to the Telegraph.
Oxford's slow population growth has been blamed on its lack of homes and the constraints of the city boundaries as it lags behind its rural neighbours. The population of the city increased by 0.36% between mid-2023 and mid-2024, amounting to an increase of 593 people, recent figures from Office of National Statistics have shown. By contrast, the Vale of Whitehorse District Council had the highest growth in the county at 2.44%, amounting to 3,552 more people. Other district areas also had higher growth than Oxford, with Charwell increasing by 1.6%, South Oxfordshire by 1.64%, and West Oxfordshire by 1.44%. A spokesperson for the City Council said the authority has a long-standing agreement with neighbouring districts to help meet Oxford's housing need, and this contributes significantly to Oxford's lower population growth figures. Developments, such as the one planned for land off Grenoble Road, where the City Council want to build 3,000 homes, lie within South Oxfordshire District Council's land. Despite South Oxfordshire District Council the thumbs up to officers to start drawing up plans in 2021, no planning application has been submitted, sparking criticism that the City Council should bring this development forward more quickly. Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing on the City Council, said, "This is because of the limited availability of land for new homes and the high demand for existing properties, which helps keep prices high and makes living in Oxford difficult for families without personal wealth or access to affordable housing. The city centre and major employment sites should be governed by the same council as the areas around the city where Oxford commuters live and where there are opportunities for new housing development. The City Council is pushing for a greater Oxford Council under the government's plans to restructure local authorities, which would mean Oxford's council boundaries would expand would expand to cover the existing Green Belt and surrounding villages such as Kidlington, Botley and Cumnor. The spokesperson added, "This would remove the artificial boundaries within the urban area and help ensure the city can grow in a less constrained way." A spokesperson for South Oxfordshire and Vale councils said their population increase was likely to be driven by a strong local economy, including high employment areas such as Science Vale, as well as the significant number of new homes. In round numbers, Cherwell had the highest population at around 170,000 in mid-2024, while Oxford stood at 166,000. Vale stood at nearly 150,000, South Oxfordshire at 156,000, and West Oxfordshire at 121,000. A spokesperson for West Oxfordshire District Council said it noted Oxfordshire has aspirations for growth that it finds difficult to accommodate within its boundaries.
A brewery revived a beloved tradition by delivering ale the old-fashioned way. Hook Norton Brewery has this month resumed delivering beer by Shire Horse and dray. Brigadier and Balmora led the delivery team guided by head coachman Nicholas Carter and groom Alistair Mills. Mr. Carter said there's something incredibly special about delivering beer the traditional way. It's a living link to our brewing heritage. The horses, as well as a third shire named Cromwell, are stabled at the brewery and can be visited 7 days a week by the public. Hook Norton is now one of only two remaining breweries that still deliver using shire horses. The dray has previously delivered to pubs in Oxford, including the Lamb and Flag.
A curious dog had to be rescued by firefighters after it followed a rabbit into a 400-metre-long drainage pipe. Crews from Rewley Road Fire Station in Oxford were called to assist in the rescue of Damson, a 3-year-old terrier, on Wednesday, August the 6th, in a field near White's Lane, Radley. Damson had followed a rabbit into a drainage pipe stretching over 400 metres. After several hours of determined work, the crews were able to locate and safely rescue Damson with the help of the RSPCA and OPC drain services. "You could see she was no longer a damson in distress," said the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue. It added, "A huge thank you to the RSPCA and OPC drain services for their invaluable help in locating her, and to M&J Evans Construction for coming to the rescue and digging with the landowner's permission the trench that helped bring her to safety."
The city of Oxford has been named one of the easiest places to find a pint in the UK, outside of Greater London. With the heatwave to continue bringing summer sun this weekend, Oxford locals shouldn't find it hard to find a refreshing pint, with the city labelled a pub hotspot in new research. It has been named as the 8th easiest place to get a pint outside of the capital city. Research conducted by Local Digital analysed maps data to crown the city with the highest pub-to-people ratio, with Oxford coming in with a total of 125 pubs. According to the research, the Rose and Crown in North Parade Avenue, the White Rabbit in Friar's Entry, and the White Hart in Headington are some of the highly rated drinking options. All of those named in the top 10 were English cities, with somewhat remote Scottish and Welsh towns identified as some of the hardest places to get a drink. Greater London was left off the ranking, as it would have otherwise dominated all 10 spots at the top of the ranking, with 178 pubs in the City of London alone. A pub famous for its collection of customers' ties has been given a refurbishment. The Bear Inn in Alfred Street, off Oxford's High Street, is Grade 2 listed and is believed by many to be the city's oldest pub. In June, it closed for refurbishment. Inside, plus some work on the building, and customers have been enjoying the updated look since it reopened last month. A statement from the pub after it reopened said, "The Bear is back up and running with lovely new renovations so that you can enjoy every second just a little more." In the 1950s, landlord Alan Corse also an Oxford Mail cartoonist, started a collection of nearly 3,000 school, college, club, and regimental ties, which became world famous. Customers would be invited to have the tail end of their ties cut off and added to the collection on display. The Oxford branch of CAMRA, Campaign for Real Ale, has researched the history of the pub, which is owned by Fuller's. Over years, numerous celebrities have visited the Bear. This included actors Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton in 1963, after the latter had visited his friend Neville Coghill, professor of English at Merton College. The couple supported a student play, and a theatre in the city has been named after them. The rock singer Ian Gillan, long associated with Deep Purple, is said to have agreed to join Black Sabbath after an all-day session at the pub in 1963. The pub appears in just one episode of the detective drama Inspector Morse, Absolute Conviction, when Morse chases an escaped prisoner through the bar.
A traumatised family have been made homeless and have turned to the public for support after losing everything they own in a city house fire. Six vehicles from Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service attended a house fire in Oxford's Bartholomew Road on Sunday, August the 3rd. While nobody was hurt, the inside of the terraced building is in ruins and the Kurundju family have been left homeless. Kabita Kurundju is the 28-year-old wife of husband Darren, 27, a chef at Rose's Thai restaurant in Oxford, and mother to their 3-year-old son Daniel. She said, "Nothing is left. Everything is lost. This includes clothes, toys, the house rental agreement, and all their other personal possessions." Describing the start of the fire, which happened when she was at work, she said her husband was cooking in the kitchen while Daniel was playing outside. She said, "My son saw the fire and said, 'Daddy, Daddy, look, there's a fire.' The two immediately fled the house and a neighbour called the fire brigade. The blaze began in the bedroom, and Mr. Gruncher said the investigation into cause is still ongoing. A spokesman for the Oxfordshire Fire and Rescue Service said, "This is not thought to be suspicious. Crews are working to establish the cause." Since then, the family have been put up by several friends as far away as Reading, while Mrs. Gruncher searches for a new home for them to rent. "I hope I will get a house soon," she said. "I'm still feeling the trauma. It feels like a dream. I cannot even express my feelings now." One thing that is lifting Mrs. Gruncher's spirits is her son's positivity, who is enjoying moving between their friends' houses, which he has dubbed hotels. "He is keeping me positive," she said. Despite their house burning down, both Mrs. Gruncher and her husband want to return to work soon, as they need to earn money and build our lives again. She said, "We haven't saved that much. I do not know how we are going to make the next step." Originally from Nepal, she said her family may send her some cash, but it won't be much. A healthcare assistant at an Oxford care home, Ms. Kwinju's colleagues have rallied round her and started up a GoFundMe page, for which she said she is very grateful. Sharon Nigrozi, who works with Ms. Kurundju, has set up the page for her close friend. Describing Mrs. Kurundju as fashionable, bubbly and fun, she called the family very down to earth and said that all help is truly appreciated. They are targeting £3,000 in total.
Blenheim Palace have received an award in recognition of its efforts to support pollinators and raise awareness of their importance. Blenheim Palace and Rouse Honey have been named a Bees Needs Champion at an award ceremony led by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. The duo began their conservation partnership in 2022, aiming to transform the Oxfordshire estate into a sanctuary for pollinators. Roy Cox, Managing Director of Estates at Blenheim Palace, said, "We're incredibly proud to receive the Bees Needs Champion Award. This recognition reflects the hard work and passion of our teams and our shared mission with Rouse Honey to protect and enhance the Blenheim Palace Estate's natural ecosystem. Preserving this and the species that depend on it for future generations is an important part of Britain's Greatest Palace's ongoing land strategy and a leading example of pollinator-first land regeneration on a heritage estate in the UK. The project has focused on restoring habitats for pollinators, improving soil health, and reconnecting fragmented ecological corridors. It has also supported existing wild bee colonies and regenerated wildflower meadows across the estate. So far, 50 acres of former arable fields have been converted into biodiverse habits, and 300 acres of new woodland have been undersown with wildflower grassland. The results include the return of 11 nationally declining bird species, such as skylarks and song thrushes, to areas restored under the pollinator strategy. The estate now supports more than 740 colonies of wild bees and 23 species of butterflies. Svetlana Ilchenko, brand manager at Rouse Honey, said, "This award is a testament to what can be achieved when like-minded partners come together with a shared purpose. At Rouse Honey, protecting the pollinators and working with Blenheim Palace to create a lasting legacy for biodiversity has been truly inspiring. By creating habitats where bees, butterflies and birds can thrive, we can reverse the decline that pollinators face."
A Cotswolds village near Oxfordshire has been named the most beautiful in England by Holiday Homes Company. Holiday Homes provide independent cottages, rated locations on key criteria, including the number of historic buildings, the estimated age of the town, whether it is within an area of outstanding natural beauty, how many people search for it online, and how many TikTok posts feature on its streets. Once they had compiled all the information, they were able to create a ranking and crowned Barton-on-the-Water in Gloucestershire the winner. Independent Cottages noted its honey-coloured Cotswold stone buildings, which line the water, and said that medieval churches and Georgian houses aside, being in the Cotswolds area of outstanding natural beauty means Barton-on-the-Water's surrounding countryside is also something to marvel at. The village, sometimes known as the Venice of the Cotswolds, has about 3,500 residents and attracts thousands of visitors every summer. But it can get very crowded with tourists during the summer, and last month, Mail Online claimed the village was under siege from day trippers. In second place was Castle Coombe in Wiltshire, another stunning Cotswolds landmark.
A volunteer who helps people to overcome drug and alcohol issues has been recognised with an award. Lynn McKinnon from Oxford was honoured at the annual Inspired by Possibility Awards, which celebrate peer mentors and volunteers who use their personal experiences to support others facing challenges related to drugs, alcohol, mental health and learning disabilities. Ms. McKinnon said, "I'm really grateful to be here today as this award means a lot. The relapse prevention group I run helps me in my continued recovery journey and also shows others that recovery is possible. It helps people to learn the life skills that we all need so that we don't turn to substance use. That's what motivates me and what I find rewarding. I want to thank the entire team in Oxfordshire and especially the peer mentors that inspired me to start my peer mentoring journey. It's been an incredible journey and it will continue for the rest of my life." Ms. McKinnon volunteers with Turning Points Oxfordshire Roads to Recovery Drug and Alcohol Service and was recognised for her dedication to supporting others. She has set up and runs a relapse prevention group, is taking a counselling course, helps with a weekly drop-in service and even cooks meals for attendees. Andy Simons, Senior Operations Manager at Turning Point, said, "Lynn's ability to promote self-efficacy and create a safe, supportive environment has had a profound impact on everyone she works with. Her compassion, dedication and resilience shine through in everything she does. We are deeply grateful for her contributions." Her colleagues said she brings understanding, lived experience and a psychological insight into substance use, making her an invaluable asset to the team.
An Oxford artist is using her craft to make a difference in a time of crisis. Printmaker Jane Part has organized a one-day art sale to raise funds for the UN Gaza appeal. This event will take place at St. Michael in the North Gate on Corn Market Street on Saturday, August 16, from 9:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Ms. Pert said, "The idea was very enthusiastically received by my fellow artists and printmakers. They've all been willing to donate their work for free to this cause. We will have more than 300 prints on show, and there'll be something for everyone." She also thanked the church for its involvement. In 2022, members of Oxford Printmakers raised $2,300 as a Support Ukraine fundraising initiative.
Families are now scrambling to find places for their children, following the sudden closure of a private school due to financial difficulties. Our Lady's Abingdon, OLA, school in Radley Road is being forced to close for financial reasons, according to its governors, who have sent letters to parents alerting them to the news. But families were not given any advance warning of the official announcement on Monday the 11th of August, and now have only weeks left to secure a place for their child in a different school before the start of the new academic year in September. It comes after the private college Oxford Sixth Form College announced it will be closing at the end of August this year due to the new VAT charges on public schools. Cardus School in Banbury, an independent school for children aged 3 to 11, also closed this year after the government announced the VAT hike in its November budget. Jobs are also being cut at St Edward's School in North Oxford. Founded in 1860 by the Sisters of Mercy, OLA is a small, independent day school for pupils aged 7 to 18, and there were about 360 pupils attending. The school governor cited Labour's introduction of VAT on school fees as one of the financial pressures leading to closure, and said a last-minute bid to secure a merger had failed. Parents and families have expressed their frustration they were not alerted earlier. Yasmin Curry from Drayton, near Abingdon, whose 14-year-old son was taught at the school, said, "Parents have been told at the same time this has gone out on social media. It's a small school and my son loved it there. He had a lovely group of friends. Now I have to tell him when he gets back from camp he has no school to go to. I don't know why parents were not alerted at the start of the summer holidays." Another resident, whose 12-year-old nephew attended OLA, added, "Families feel they have been left high and dry. I don't know why the school couldn't have stayed open for one more term. It's going to be very difficult now to contact the local education authority during the summer break." The governor said they would try to support families in their search for new schools. The statement added, "The closure will affect the entire school and community and beyond the wider Abingdon area. Our immediate focus will be on supporting families in securing alternative school places in Oxfordshire, assisting staff through the redundancy process and helping them find new employment. A contingency plan is in place to ensure Year 11 and 13 students receive full support with their examination results and onward progression." Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran said she was shocked and saddened to hear of the school's closure. She added, "We understand the uncertainty and anxiety that students, their families and teachers must be feeling now. We are engaging with OLA and the County Council to establish what support is being offered for students to ensure everything possible is being done to help a smooth transition to new schools as soon as possible." James Plum, Oxfordshire Alliance spokesperson for children and young people on Oxfordshire County Council, said, "The closure would cause significant disruption, made worse by the fact that families have been given just weeks before the start of the new term to secure alternative school places." He added, "The imposition of VAT and business rates has dealt a hammer blow to schools like OLA. These measures don't just affect parents who choose independent education. They have a knock-on effect for the whole system, forcing children into already stretched state schools." The governors added in their statement, "In recent months, the governors have explored every possible avenue to avoid closure."
An Oxfordshire grandmother who was arrested for showing support for a banned group in support of Palestine said she knew she would be taken away by the police beforehand. Ginny Herbert from Cholsey near Wallingford was one of more than 530 arrested in London on Saturday, August the 9th, for showing her support for Palestine Action. Controversially, Palestine Action is recognised as a terrorist organisation by the government, and the Metropolitan Police will detain anyone expressing support for it. The decision has caused outrage among civil and human rights supporters. The 77-year-old was one of the hundreds of arrests made on Saturday of people who were showing their support for the group. Ms. Herbert, who describes herself as a peaceful activist, said she is devastated by what's happening in Gaza. More than 60,000 Palestinians have died in the Gaza war, and around 2,000 Israelis, various sources agree on, including the Gaza Health Ministry and Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs. But Ms. Herbert said one of the things that would make a difference would be if we in this country stopped sending arms or components of arms that were being used to murder Palestinians. And there's an organisation that was attempting to do that, and then they were prosecuted for spraying paint and on an aeroplane. She was referring to Palestine Action, which allegedly broke into Bryce Norton in Carterton and vandalised RAF planes. I was just shocked when some of the MPs said that action was disgraceful, when actually what's going on in Gaza is disgraceful, the protester added. And then they moved to proscribe it and make it a terrorist organisation. I just felt that's a step too far and I had to speak up. Ms. Herbert, who said she was also arrested for another protest on July the 19th, said she will not be silenced. The demonstration on Saturday that led to 532 arrests was organised by Defend Our Juries, which the grandmother of four said had organised incredibly well. She said she was briefed ahead of going that protesters were to be quiet and hold placards expressing support for Palestine Action and opposition to genocide. Defend Our Juries had also told her to be expected to be arrested, she added. If and when she goes to court, Ms. Herbert said she will plead not guilty, but is still undecided on if she will attend any more demonstrations in the meantime. Downing Street has said Palestine Action is a violent organisation that has committed significant injury. Palestine Action said the government has made false and defamatory claims that it is a violent organisation. The next mass action to lift the ban on Palestine Action will take place in Parliament Square on Saturday, September the 6th.
Postgraduate researchers, academics and policymakers in Oxfordshire joined forces to tackle local issues. The collaboration was part of the 2025 Local Policy Lab Fellowship Programme, which aims to address societal problems through academic insight. The fellowship is a partnership between Oxfordshire County Council, the University of Oxford, and Oxford Brookes University. It gives students and researchers the chance to engage with their communities and to gain a deeper understanding of local public policy. The 14 fellows from the programme worked on projects with policy officers from Oxfordshire County Council and Oxford City Council over a three-month period. These projects are aimed at improving well-being and reducing inequalities in the county. The results of their research were shared with academics, local policymakers, and community partners in an event at the University of Oxford's Blavatnik School of Government. The projects, which build on last year's pilot programme, cover a range of topics. These include how family hubs could improve family care provision in Oxfordshire and the factors influencing fair pay and workforce diversity. They align with Oxfordshire's three priorities as a marmot place: supporting a good start in life, creating fair employment, and ensuring a healthy standard of living for all. Professor Alexander Betts, Pro Vice Chancellor of External Engagement, Sport and Community at the University of Oxford, said, "It's wonderful that we can combine the academic assets of Oxford's two universities and share these with the county and city councils to support evidence-based policy making in these key areas."
A 9-year-old musician has been awarded a diploma in piano and had her debut poetry collection published in the same month. Arabella Stell from Oxford began showcasing her creative talents in 2021 when she held her first solo art exhibition at the Brick Lane Gallery in London at the age of five. The exhibition featured 45 large-scale oil and acrylic paintings exploring themes of nature, mythology and spirituality. Last month, Arabella published her debut poetry collection, Fly to My Beginning. The collection, written before the ages of 7 and 8, was published by American publisher Wipf & Stock. The foreword of her collection is written by Dr. Sian Gronley, Associate Professor of Medieval Literature and Fellow in English at St. Anne's College, Oxford. Arabella was also awarded an ARSM Diploma in Piano Performance by the Associated Board of the Royal School of Music last month, achieving a merit just 3 years after she began learning the instrument. Largely self-taught, she's only had occasional lessons and also plays the organ, sings, and composes music for voice and instruments.
An Oxfordshire site manager said it is an honour to have received a top industry award. Andy Elder, who works for the Kaya Homes Chiltern at its Nobel Park development just outside Didcot, has been awarded the Pride in the Job Quality Award from the National Home Building Council. Mr. Elder said it's an honour to receive the Pride in the Job Award. It's a true testament to the commitment shown by the wider team and the trades we have at Nobel Park. The team's passion and dedication to building quality homes for our customers shines through these awards, and I'm extremely grateful. I look forward to the Pride in Job Awards in autumn and hopefully progressing further. This is the first time Mr. Elder has received the award, which is handed out by the National Home Building Council, the UK's largest provider of new home warranties and insurance. Now in their 45th year, the annual awards are sometimes referred to as the Oscars of the sector and celebrate exceptional standards in house building.
A group of care home residents have enjoyed a boat trip along the River Thames. Waterside Court Care Home in Wallingford took residents on the adventure in partnership with the River Tyne Boat Trust. The trip was planned to coincide with the Henley Royal Regatta, which allowed the group to see the build-up to the event, with rowers gliding past in preparation for their races. The residents were joined by friends and family members on the trip. Clemence Herriman, Waterside Court's Senior General Manager, transported the residents to the river on the Holmes minibus and said, "It was such a wonderful day. The sun was shining, the water was sparkling, and our residents, families and friends were full of smiles and laughter as we cruised along. I felt very lucky to enjoy this experience alongside the Waterside Court family. We will certainly be back."
A unique fitness initiative is helping older adults to stay active, improve their heart health and build their strength from the comfort of a chair. The Salvation Army's weekly chair-based exercise classes in Bicester are designed to help participants to maintain their strength while reducing the risk of cardiovascular incidents and fostering a strong community spirit. Led by experienced trainer and PhD researcher Lavender Wang, the classes are held every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. in the Salvation Army Hall on Hart Place. Each session costs £5 and focuses on improving cardiovascular health and musculoskeletal strength through low-impact seated exercises. These exercises are suitable for people with limited mobility or chronic conditions such as osteoporosis or diabetes. Benefits of the chair-based exercise include improved posture, mobility strength, breathing, energy levels, sleep quality, and mental health. Attendees are provided with all the necessary equipment and are asked to arrive early to complete a health screening questionnaire to ensure the exercises are safe and suitable for them. The classes have received positive feedback from attendees who have reported benefits such as better posture, improved mobility, deeper breathing, and enhanced sleep quality. Many of the participants also consider the group as a crucial part of their social life. The chair-based exercise classes are open to everyone, but they're particularly beneficial for those over 50. as well as fitness classes, the Salvation Army in Bicester serves its community through a variety of practical and spiritual initiatives, including a food bank for families facing financial hardship, emergency assistance for the homeless, and The Vine, a training cafe open on Tuesday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. during term time. This cafe provides students with additional needs the opportunity to learn skills such as food preparation and customer service to help foster independence.
With the last August bank holiday on the way, patients are being reminded to order their repeat prescriptions in plenty of time. Some community pharmacies and all GP surgeries will be closed over the August 25th bank holiday weekend, meaning patients are being urged to order repeat prescriptions as soon as possible. Many GP practices offer an online repeat prescription service via their websites, but people who do not have online access can call their surgery for repeat medications. Prescriptions can be collected in person or sent to a chosen pharmacy. The NHS app is another avenue patients can use to order repeat prescriptions. Dr. Abid Irfan, Director of Primary Care at the Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West Integrated Care Board said, "Help yourself stay well over the bank holiday by making sure you have enough of your medication to see you through." Pharmacy opening times for the bank holidays can be found on the NHS website. Oxford United's proposals for a new stadium have been granted planning permission following a lengthy council meeting. The application for a 16,000 capacity ground at the Triangle, south of Kidlington Roundabout, was discussed by Charwell District Council's Planning Committee. After more than 4 hours of talks, the committee eventually agreed with a report previously published by the council's planning team, which recommended the application for approval. The application will now be referred to the Secretary of State, a standard procedure for large-scale applications. The meeting started at 4 p.m. and finished at close to 8:30, with 6,000 people watching from the council's live stream. Councillor Kerry Thornhill proposed to approve the application, with that proposal seconded by Councillor David Hingley, and later on, 14 voted for, with 3 abstentions and 1 vote against. Ms Thornhill said, "I think this is an extremely comprehensive, well-tailored, well-considered application. I don't feel the application paves over any negatives and deals with them head on." U's Chief Executive Tim Williams previously said at the meeting, "We've worked over several years with officers, consultees and the community. We've made major changes and gone above and beyond what was expected. This is a significant project. It will create jobs and support local businesses. Oxfordshire has been waiting for an opportunity like this. This is a new chapter, a place where children will come to be inspired." Roland Clements, a steward for more than 40 years at United, described the club as a second home and a second family. He said, "The club has kept me going. I live on my own. Without the football and the Manor Club, I'd be staring at four walls. If this stadium doesn't happen, all that goes. Without this, there is no more community and no more football. Don't listen. Let this end here." There were, though, arguments objecting the application. Ward Councillor for Kidlington East, Linda Ward, told the committee, "Football is a beautiful game. This application is a beast. How can you assess the benefits against the harm? Nobody seems willing to take this bull by the horns." Ian Middleton, the other Ward Councillor for Kidlington East, added, "I want Oxford United to continue to thrive. I'm not a football supporter, but fully recognise the enjoyment it brings. The impact on local residents will be significant and consistent." The U's submitted a full planning application to the District Council in February 2024, while a legally binding lease option with Oxfordshire County Council was signed 3 months later. The decision means that the club is now set to stay at the Kassam Stadium until June 2028 at the latest, while a new ground is built.
A moment of brilliance from Tyler Goodrum proved the difference as Oxford United beat Colchester United in the first round of the Carabao Cup. Goodrum netted the only goal of the tie with 9 minutes on the clock, smashing home from 25 yards out. The Ewes search for a quick fire second goal with a long throw in from Curry, leading to Hillock heading over. United had less zip in their play in the second half, but Branigan went close with 13 minutes to go when he drove in an effort from more than 30 yards, forcing Macy to stretch and push the ball around the post for a corner. The Ewes probed in the closing stages for the second goal to seal the tie, but it wasn't necessary, as United had booked their place in the second round without it.
It's a daredevil activity you would usually associate with a big top circus, but youngsters and adults have been given the opportunity to have a go at becoming high-flying trapeze artists with the expert assistance of staff from a training school. High Fly Trapeze is a trapeze school now in Florence Park, East Oxford. Its trapeze apparatus and nets have been set up in the park, and customers, some with little or no experience, are able to book sessions to build up their skills. The company says High Fly's teaching ethos centres around the phrase progress, not perfection. As a student, you will face different challenges in your trapeze journey. Some will be physical and some mental. At High Fly Trapeze, we'll encourage and enable you to overcome both, helping you achieve things you never imagined were possible. It adds, unsurprisingly, we are here to help you progress within flying trapeze. The real question is, how do we do that? Between us, our team have been coaching students for over 20 years.
Three scouts from Oxfordshire are among nearly 500 from the UK who attended an international event in Portugal from the 25th of July to the 3rd of August. Maya Sweetman, an adult social care worker from Bicester, James Lambert, a civil engineer from Marston, and Jess Titchener, a politics student from Wallingford, took part in the World Scout Moot, held every 4 years, which is a global gathering of 9,000 scouts aged 18 to 25 from around the world. The 16th edition of the event began on July the 25th at Tejo Park in Lisbon and concluded in Porto. Speaking ahead of the event, Ms. Sweetman said, "This moot is my first big international scout trip and I'm so excited. I'm hoping to make new international scout friends from around the world, maybe Chile or Thailand." The programme included a four-day expedition through remote parts of the country, with scouts grouped together with others from different nations to complete one of 100 routes. Participants then reconvened at a main camp in Ovar for additional activities focused on cultural exchange and skill development before the closing ceremony. Ms. Titchener said before leaving, "I had an amazing scout trip to South Korea in 2023, and this is my next scout adventure. I'm looking forward to meeting new scout friends from Asia and Africa and finding out all about them. I'm also going on a Portuguese exploration down the coastline. It's going to be brilliant." Mr. Lambert added, "I'm thrilled to be heading off on my first international scouting adventure. Taking part in a World Scout event has been a dream and now it's finally happening. I'm looking forward to connecting with scouts from every corner of the globe, picking up all kinds of new skills and diving into the energy and spirit of the event. I'm also curious to discover what makes Portugal so unique." This theme for this year's Scout Moot was Engage, and aimed to encourage connection, cross-cultural understanding and friendship among participants. The event is designed not only to create memorable experiences, but to equip young people with the skills and motivation to make a positive impact in their communities and beyond. Chief Scout Dwayne Fields said before the event, "A massive good luck to Maya, James and Jess and all the UK Scouts who are at the World Scout Moot. It's an amazing opportunity to discover yourself and the world while exploring how you can create meaningful change. The true international spirit of scouting will shine through, with so many chances to learn from other scouts around the world. I know each UK scout attending will grab the opportunities to create memories, friendships, and skills to last a lifetime."
A collection of wartime letters, diaries, and photographs that have never been shared with the public will be unveiled online to mark the 80th anniversary of VJ Day. The Watson Collection will be published on Friday through the University of Oxford's Their Finest Hour project. It tells the story of RAF serviceman Frank Watson, who was captured by Japanese forces in 1942, and his wife May, who waited more than 4 years for his return. VJ Day, or Victory Over Japan Day, marks the end of World War II in the Pacific when Japan surrendered to the Allied forces. Mr. Watson was taken prisoner following the fall of Singapore and spent years in a prisoner of war camp.
The Story Museum has been crowned the best family attraction in the UK. The Oxford attraction scooped the Best Family Experience title at the National Muddy Stilettos Awards. It first won the award in the regional round, thanks to votes from the public. It was then picked by Muddy Stilettos editors as the best family experience in the country. The attraction is the driving force behind Oxford's ever-popular Alice's Day celebrations. The Story Museum's head of the creative programme, Amina Inayat, said, "We are over the moon to have won our category nationally. We work hard to provide memorable, inspiring experiences for young people, families and schools throughout our galleries and our learning programme. It means so much to us to have been recognised by this award." The museum recently expanded its offerings with a new permanent gallery, the Story Arcade, which was developed with help from the National Lottery Heritage Fund and opened in July 2025. The Story Arcade celebrates storytelling through video games, inviting visitors to level up their imagination. It features custom-built arcade-style machines with games to play, dressing up, and side quests. Muddy Stilettos, a lifestyle blog with 1.2 million monthly fans, nearly 275,000 subscribers and 250 social followers, described the Social Story Arcade as a clever and unexpectedly moving way to get kids and nostalgic grown-ups thinking differently about the stories they play and maybe even create. Smart, stylish and a whole lot of fun. The Story Arcade is top-tier summer holiday shout. The Muddy Stilettos Awards are held annually, with the public voting for their favourite independent cultural venues, restaurants, businesses and family attractions in their region. Winners of each region are put forward for the national award, which is judged by the editors of Muddy Stilettos. Finalists in the Best Family Experience category included Jimmy's Farm and Wildlife Park in Ipswich, Atwell Farm Park in Redditch, Bucklebury Farm in Bucklebury, and Jordan's Mill in Biggleswade. But the Story Museum in Oxford beat them all to claim the crown. According to the award organisers, the museum provides interesting and exciting experiences for young people, families and schools through its galleries and learning programme. The museum's recognition as the best family attraction in the country is testament to the impact it's had on its visitors. The museum continues to be a popular destination, with its new Story Arcade proving to be a hit. The Story Museum remains committed to providing engaging and creative experiences for all its visitors.
More than 300 riders are expected to take part in a charity horse ride in South Oxfordshire. The South Oxfordshire sponsored ride, organised by British Hounds Sports Association, will start and finish near Watlington on October 5th, following a 12-mile route through the countryside and raising funds for a range of charities. Last year's event raised more than £9,000, with donations going to causes including Macmillan Cancer Support, Riding for the Disabled Association, Thames Valley Air Ambulance, and the Royal Agricultural Benevolent Institution. The Kimblewick Hunt, an accredited member of the British Hound Sports Association, will provide stewards for the day. The ride will feature 50 optional fences for the more experienced riders, while all jumps remain optional to ensure the event is accessible to all abilities.
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. This is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available in our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.